So, as everyone settles in, I would like to start like yesterday with one of the six processes which bring the chanting to perfection, and that's manasamharana, or collecting the mind. Think of it like when you go on a journey, you might need to collect the items which you need from different parts of the house. Oh, I need a toothbrush. Where is my toothbrush? Yeah, it's in the bathing room. Then I need to have an extra set of cloth that is stored somewhere else. Yeah, but I also need a pen and a notebook to write down notes. Well, that's somewhere else. And in this way, you collect in one place all the things which you need in order to go on your journey. And so in the same way, you collect at the outset of either japa or kirtan your mind which and your thoughts which are sprayed out all over. Your attention, you bring it back from where it was focused. Perhaps you had to book a ticket and be very attentive to just get the date correct. And you collect your emotions. Perhaps you were hurt because of something. And you bring it all in one place, attention, emotion, and so many other things. And then you can do what is so absolutely important, that is to bring your whole attention and your whole focus and your whole everything on the mantra. So we will start to just bring the energy together. The easiest way I know of when we have a group with diversified members is to chant the Agni mantra, the Ram. So please sit straight as you. And while you chant, you bring everything to the sound vibration. I will do it one time alone, and then we will do it 3 to 5 times. I will see how good you are doing together. So one time alone to give you the tonality. Mantra meditational workshop. Yesterday we learned to align our body with the practice by taking care that our posture is upright, our pronunciation is detailed and correct, and our listening, our audial reception is there. No? Then we went to the mind. We gave the example of Dronacharya teaching the warrior prince Arjuna on just focusing. You remember the eye of the bird, no? So the focus means your mind is pulled out of the past, thinking what happened there, and out of thinking of the future, plans, ideas, fears, anxieties, and brought into the present moment. And the second exercise we did, or we talked about, is whenever the mind wanders, as it will, don't become unnecessarily angry at your mind and stone it. Again, you were absent-minded. No, this is the chanchala, the nature of the mind is like this. But you can bring it back to what you're doing. Fine, this is what we did yesterday. Now we will enter the deepest area, body, mind, and now we go to the heart. Let me make very clear, when we speak of the heart, we do not speak of the mechanical organ, the pump, which I heard once pumps a tremendous amount of liters around the in the body. You can Google it. It's really impressive. I don't recall it the number of liters at this moment. I'm absolutely sure. No, we don't speak of this pump, nor do we speak of the heart as the seat of emotions, hopes, fears, hurt, great happiness and elation. No, we speak of a different heart, a third heart, which for some of us needs to be recovered. Discovering is one thing, recovering is to get back what you have lost. It is the spiritual heart, which is the seat of all that which is spiritual. It is a wonderful gift to the human being to have this spiritual organ, if you so want, which can receive the spirit. I always tell in my workshops that there's a fine border between that which is material and that is spiritual. And this border, fine border, goes right through the heart. If you manage to get out of the material heart, the material domain of mostly thoughts that relate to this illusory world, this temporary world, and you cross the border, and what will you meet there? You will meet yourself, the true self, the self behind all the roles and masks by which the world knows you, and you will also be able to meet the divine there, eternity, and all your spiritual prospects. But you will have to cross the border. It is important to do that. And sometimes we may get out of the material thoughts, but we don't enter the spiritual realm. Then we are somewhat in no man's land. You know, when you cross into Afghanistan from Persia, there is the stripe of where there are the the skeletons of lost camels, you know, who went into the snow, no man's land, when nothing is going on. It's just the cessation of material thoughts, but not yet the beginning of delight-filled, ecstatic spiritual perceptions, no? Many schools talk about the snow body's land in their attempt to guide their students away from the matter, but they do not speak of that delightful spiritual land. So yes, this border between the two is not out there, it is in here, in the heart, and yes, it is known as the sacred space of the heart. A very devotional description of this is the temple inside, the Antara Mandira. This temple inside has a door. This door is often guarded by a terrible watchman who doesn't allow many people to go into it. It's a chokidar, they call it in India. Do you have any idea what could lock the entrance into the temple of the heart? I'm asking you.
Fear.
Fear, very good answer. Attachments, yeah, our attachments that hold us back.
Ignorance,
avidya,
desire,
wealth, you said?
Pride.
With this last word, we come very close to what the ancient wisdom texts say. It's the ahankara, or the false ego. And it is from this false ego, my dear everyone, this false identification, where all the things which you have so nicely mentioned, attachment, fears, pride, oh, so many things you have mentioned, they all stem from this. They all come from there. They all grow on the ground of the ego, and it's that ego which needs to be I only know busted as a word, but I realize this is not a very fine word, which needs to be cracked. At the beginning of spiritual events, you find very often priests take a coconut and then throw them on the ground. This is not because they have an anger problem. What they want to indicate with this symbolic act is that let the ego crack, let it go, so that I can pass and come into this area of the spirit. No? This is this temple of the heart. And this door can be accessed by what is called Navanga Bhakti, the ninefold path of Bhakti. Bhakti, or love, is very opposite to the ego, which consists in what we do here, but there is much more to it. There is hearing, chanting. Sometimes people say, why don't we just sing throughout, you know, why do we first hear and then sing? Well, this engages you completely. By engaging your listening first, you take things in and then let it soak in, and then you put it out again. So it's a call and response fashion which activates you on deeper levels. That's why we do this in kirtan. But there are other processes that bring you into this mystical place, the space in the heart. Meditation, smaranam,
worship, surrender. Wow, my God. Entering the higher connection in such an intimate way that you can be so close to the divine that you are the friend of the divine and he's the friend of you. Mamatva. Oh, there's so much to talk, but here we want to be essentially fixing ourselves on entering that sacred space, which is often compared with the temple, where we have to bypass the ego. I must tell you from the experience of many very elevated saints who go on what is called an anusthan, a japa anusthan, where they get up at a time like 3 o'clock in the morning, and then they will chant up till 10 o'clock without saying any word, anything. They have reported that as they go through the body and the mind and go deeper and want to access that spiritual place, there comes a time when they feel almost like a crisis, a total unwillingness to continue to chant. Maybe you feel that also when you do kirtan. There's sometimes a total unengagement. You feel like, what am I doing here? There's a breath work workshop starting. Let me go. Oh no, they serve food. I mean, let me run away after the food. And so on. There's a resistance, a hard resistance. Yes, no? You can feel that when you are engaged in bona fide spiritual process. This is very good. Now the thief, the ego, has been caught. And he doesn't like it. He is arrested. Oh no, it's not no longer about me, mine, and I, and all this. My little world. I have to step to the side. I will be dethroned from the throne which I have usurped. Usurped means stolen away from the divine. No, I don't like it. But those who chant know if you can go through this desert, some call it in the West, after Teresa of Avila and her pupil John of the Cross, the dark night of the soul. No? After you have gone through this period of absolute dryness, acridness is also called another word, or this desert where the ego tries to push you away from your journey and push you back. Wow, the door can sometimes swing wide open and you are invited by invisible hosts into this sacred space of the heart. This happens if you really want to go there, if you feel that your love, your attachment has now been reclaimed from the world of illusion and goes to God. May I ask you, were you ever in love? I mean, on the man-woman subject? Some of you, not the head. Who is at this moment, well, this no one will point his finger, who, but ask yourself, are you at this moment in love? You have someone, a partner. So this feeling will guarantee that your thoughts will often go to the partner, this loving feeling of affection. It's something very wonderful if we are gifted with this. There is a prayer which says, just as young men desire young ladies, ooh.
And just like young ladies desire young men, my dear Lord, may the same affection and loving attachment go to you. There's a beautiful story in the Bhakti tradition which I would like to tell you about, this transferal of mundane feelings to divinity. There was a little boy. He was born in a village in Bengal. His parents called him Bandhu, which means friend, who lost first his father and then his mother at a very young age, perhaps 5 or 6 years. Somehow his relatives were not known to him. So he was in this village, a very poor village of fishermen, and there was really no one there to take care of him. He was a burden, really an orphan. So he decided to go to a town called Navadvip. Some of you have perhaps visited it. It's a sacred town. And he met a saint there who heard about him. I mean, he told him, and he said, "My dear Bandhu, there's only one person who is capable of taking care of all your needs and who is also willing to do this. You only must find him. What is his name?" The saint said, "Krishna." So Bandhu went now through the streets of Navadvip and asked, "Are you Krishna? Are you Krishna?" He asked the beggar, he asked the widow, he asked even children, "Are you Krishna?" And they thought, Bandhu is a little bit off the shelf, so to say. I don't know if you walk through a Haridwar and a little boy comes with great eagerness in his eyes and tears. "Are you Krishna?" I mean, you would say, someone needs to take care of this boy. But not me, I'm a Westerner. Anyway, so one day he met a person, he said, "Krishna lives in Vrindavan by the bank of the river Jamuna. Go there." How do I get there? "For a little boy, it's very difficult," he said, the person. "You will have to cross dangerous forests with lions and tigers. You better should go daily to the marketplace where pilgrim groups assemble, and then ask one of these groups if they go to Vrindavan, and if yes, you should ask them if they're going to take you and take care of your food and protect you and show you the path, the way." So Bandhu eventually found a group of pilgrims who took him to Vrindavan, and there he was now eager. Soon I'm meeting him. He met everyone on the in the town. "Are you Krishna?" "No." "You?" "No." Then once a saintly person took compassion and said, "Bandhu, sit down. To find Krishna, you need to learn under a spiritual master. All these things you need to learn that help you to uncover your spiritual heart. He's right there in the core of your heart, but you must know how to overcome the bondages of ego, of illusion. So you better go to one proper guru. I know one." And he directed him to a very old man who lived there with his wife. They had about 7 cows in Sringavat, is the place in Vrindavan. And every morning
the old man opened the sacred book, the Bhagavatam, and read in Sanskrit to it, and then explained to Bandhu these wonderful concepts. Bandhu said, can I do anything to serve you? Yes, said the old man, a little old now, if you could go out with the cows and herd the cows. But yes, I'm an excellent cowherd man, said Bandhu, although he was not. He was a fisher's boy, not a cowherd's boy. But he took care of the cows every day. He served the old man who graciously shared with him the wisdom of the Bhagavatam and who eventually gave him the sacred diksha, the sacred initiation in the process of bhakti. And yes, he learned and learned. So one day, I will make it short, Bandhu went with his cows to the Yamuna River when he saw on the opposite bank of the Yamuna a dust cloud rising. Someone or something or many things were coming and raising dust. And he looked, and then the dust cloud disappeared. The next morning morning was Bhagavatam training. The next day he went again to the Yamuna and he saw at around 5 o'clock in the evening, sun was still up, again this dust cloud, and this time he heard the mooing of cows, which was so attractive and so different from his cows. He thought, who is in that cloud? But the cloud disappeared and everything was gone. The next day he came and he heard the sound of flutes. But my dear everyone, it was a flute concert where each note was so delicious, or delicious as food, delightful, that he went into states of ecstasy. He came back the next day and then he noticed movement, a herd of millions of white Surabi cows. They seemed to have come from another dimension. They were walking. Then he saw many boys. They had different complexion. Some were green, some were dark blue, some were yellow or red, orange, everything, dancing, smiling and being in bliss. And then the whole thing disappeared, just like the light of a candle is no longer there, the flame of the candle, when it's taken by the wind. Then the next day he came, and this time he saw in the midst of these cows and boys, two personalities who were moving with flowing movements, who were playing their flute, who were dancing. And when he saw them, he just ran through the Yamuna. There were these, I hope I can get the right English word, forts, you know, when it's not deep water, you can run through. And as he approached the two personalities in the middle, they smiled at him and disappeared. Again, he came the next day. And he came, this time he was allowed to come close, and he asked the question, are you Krishna? And one of the two boys, who was colored like a dark rain cloud that is illumined by a flash of lightning, looked at him with eyes full of love. And as Bandhu looked in these eyes, he lost his Bandhu-ness. he fell into an ocean of love and fainted. When he woke up, he was alone. Some of the cows were nudging him like this, and he knew he had found Krishna. Now, Krishna needed to wait until Bandhu was ready to search for him, and further learning the initial stages on purifying the heart on the path of bhakti. But then he revealed himself to Bandhu, and every day Bandhu would walk with Krishna, dance with Krishna, be with Krishna. He would bring food from home to Krishna, and in this way they had a wonderful exchange. But what happened there in this exchange happened in that other domain, the world of the spirit. So I thought what we will do now is, we are good. This is now my wristwatch stopped. I have one of these old things. This is a good sign. Time has no influence in the transcendental realm. But I would love to invite Gokrishna now and Madhava to join me on stage. We will now try to make a kirtan where we will try to enter that sacred space of the heart. And then I will give you some thing. Oops! Sorry. Let me just... this, you don't hear this now, but... what? Our secret here. It can be too. The Russian sentimental. So, my dear everyone, I would love now to take you on a journey to that place, the most precious place which you have, that sacred space of the heart. And in this journey, I would like to introduce to you the main rule of, rule is not the way to say this, the main principle of spiritual life. It is expressed in these words, ye yatamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. Mama vat manuvatam te manushyapata sarvasha. This means, in the degree in which someone applies himself and surrenders or gives himself, the word is gives himself, to this practice, in that degree I will reveal myself. So I can guide you, but I can't replace your own spiritual path and your own, and that is good. We should always have freedom and independence, no? So I will do my best. Please try your best as well. Ready?
Yes.
Ready, good. No, not now, not now. Is it, what tonality is it? Sounds correct. You will make a simple centering exercise. Please bring your body in an upright position.
we will do some centering first, and then we will sing from that second place. If you want to do the mudra for this, the prana mudra, both hands touch what is this called, the ring finger and the pinky, is it pinky? And then the other, yes, see? Yes, yes. Let us do a few very internal ohms and then listen to the guidance, and then I'm going to chant one time om alone, and then we will do this three times together.
Relax.
peace, the calm that comes when we relax. Now, in order to calm, by the way, it is natural when you relax, some of us then start to cough. Don't feel inconvenience. It's not a good sign in a way. Now we will calm our mind more by breathing. First, do a complete exhale. And a little bit more. Then inhale. Nice breath work where you try to lengthen the exhale. You will see how this increases the volume of your breathing. Your breath should go very fine, not very much forced, but directed. Wherever your mind moves, or there is an unpleasant feeling perhaps, bring that to your breath. Just bind it to your breath, or better even, walk with your attention next to your breath. I have the feeling that some of you are not yet deeply breathing, so please, it will come when you exhale more deeply. No thoughts, just be with your breath. Each name.
gently and patiently into your heart space, which is underneath. And then from there, expressing love or affection or gratitude to that divine as you understand him. Please, let's try now. Is really up to grace. And therefore, chanting in that sacred space in the heart is possible if you express love in a spiritual relationship to the one with the many names. It's that love which needs to be activated, that was directed everywhere in this world. And there is no harm if we love people in this world, but we need to bring that to the divine. And then the door opens and there will be a monsoon shower of emotions and tears. And as you do this kirtan, you know, continue in the kirtan, I would just recommend you practice with each kirtan. First you sing nicely, then you focus, you bring your willful attention. It's a beginning, a willful act. You will make some effort, and then you will see that all of a sudden you fall into the space, and then there is no effort. It's just sailing over the clouds of the material energy and feeling something like I have arrived. So I wish you all the best. It is a problem for me to stop here because there's so much more to tell, but I think as an initial take, if you forget everything what you heard, just remember body, mind, heart. These three things that every one of us can do. I wish you a wonderful rest of the Kirtan festival. It's a whole month yet to go. You are in the best place. And a small recommendation, try to go in the mornings to the banks of Mother Ganga. There are some very first-class yogis to get spiritual clarity in your in the head. So see you in the afternoon. We are only a kirtan away. All the best. Hare Krishna. Only a kirtan away, no? Hare Krishna.